Are you sick of being told you have faith, we have science? Have you ever been frustrated with not being able to defend your faith or give a reasonable answer for the hope that lies within you? Coming up next on Hope Radio is the New York Apologetics Radio Show that will help you to present your faith with conviction, confidence, and clarity. Now, here's Nick and Anthony with the New York Apologetics Radio Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the New York Apologetics Radio Broadcast. We have another exciting program on tap for you guys today. But first, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Anthony Uvinio, and I serve on the Elder Board at Church on the Sound, located in Stony Brook, New York. And I have with me here Nick Mitchell, who is an associate pastor at the Abundant Life Church of God, located in Holbrook, New York. And together, we form New York Apologetics. For those of you who are listening for the first time, New York Apologetics is all about defending the Christian faith. We've built an impressive collection of material that anyone interested in defending their faith can freely access at newyorkapologetics.com. So now let's turn our attention to tonight's topic. Nick.
Okay, Ant. Last week we started our series titled Apologetics 101. Those of you who were listening, you know that we started the series to help you become familiar with apologetics. Now, to get the most out of the series, we're going to make a couple of suggestions. Number one, listen to the broadcast every week because the information has a definite order. In other words, this week builds on last week and so on. You might be saying to yourself, what if I miss a broadcast? Well, that's okay. We are now posting the broadcasts on the website. If you go to www.newyorkapologetics.com and click on Apologetics 101 in the tab, you'll see a menu that leads you to our broadcasts as well as all of the material associated. Every week, we place a worksheet for that week's broadcast on the website. Why? So you can print the worksheets and fill them out. This way you have kind of like an apologetic source book or notebook that you can always refer to. Also, if you have your Bible handy, this will be most helpful because we do go through some Bible verses and you may want to look those up and see them for yourself. And finally, if you get stuck or you don't understand something or you'd like more info on it, just on the bottom of the page on each broadcast, there's a questions or comments tab. Just type it in, put in your email address, press send, and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. Okay, so where did we leave off last week? Well, last week we talked about the Greek term apologia, the true meaning of the word apologetics. We covered a little bit about apologetics in the Bible. We discussed God, our minds, and apologetics. We discussed reasons that apologetics are useful for, and we started to talk about the slide towards the post-Christian culture, and that's where we left off.
Right. So on last week's worksheet, we were up to the heading Apologetics and the Culture. So if you read that first question, Nick, we'll go through it and start answering them.
On last week's worksheet, on the bottom of page one, under Apologetics and the Culture, the question was, Western culture is deeply post-Christian, true or false?
Ooh, I know. True. Then the answer to that question would be true. Good.
No, okay, so, you know, okay, now that you know out there that we're post-Christian, deeply post-Christian, what exactly does that mean? We have a definition for you.
The prevailing movement is that our culture is heading towards secularism rather than Christianity. In other words, we're moving in the wrong direction.
All right, so as a society, we are essentially not so Christian as we used to be. We're moving more towards secularism than we are toward Christianity.
Right. More and more people are rejecting Christianity and moving away from it rather than toward it.
Which we're going to talk about on today's topic. But there are two prevailing thoughts, if you look on your worksheet, in American post-Christian culture. And I'll explain to you the first one. And that is, this comes from Dr. Craig's book, Reasonable Faith. He says this, that theology is not a source of genuine knowledge and therefore is not a science. Again, if you're writing this, theology is not a source of genuine knowledge and therefore is not a science. And that's a deeply post-Christian statement.
Right. And in fact, it's kind of like anti-philosophy. That'd be like saying that philosophy is not genuine knowledge and therefore not a science, even though science is based on philosophy. So it's kind of disingenuous for a non-theist or a materialist to say something like that.
All right. So continuing on with last week's worksheet that we're going to finish it up. On number four, it said the person who was raised in a secularized culture might blank see Christianity as an intelligently viable option. And the answer for that, of course, is
not.
All right. So you might not. If you're raised in a secularized culture, you may not see Christianity as an intelligently viable option. Number five, the person who's raised in a culture where Christianity is an intelligibly viable option may exhibit an
openness
to the gospel. And number six, to those who are raised in a post-Christian culture setting, believing in God could be like someone coming to you or me and asking us to believe in
leprechauns.
Which I don't think any of us believe.
Well, I eat Lucky Charm cereal, so leprechauns are an integral part of my life, but I don't trust in them for anything, as
right.
I would God.
I don't even know what to say. No, strengthening believers. There's basically two statements left on last week's worksheet, and it says, number one, Dr. Craig writes that in high school and college, Christian teenagers are intellectually assaulted in every manner of non-Christian
worldview,
coupled with an overwhelming
relativism.
Right. And number two, which I thought was kind of funny, we dare not send our children out to high school and university armed with rubber
swords
and plastic
armor.
We need to have good answers to that. Questions.
Yeah, and that's what we're here to do today, give you good answers for the questions that people have so that we put a pebble in their shoe, get them to think about things that really matter. When we're walking in the truths of Christianity, we're not swinging plastic swords and holding up plastic shields. We're actually hitting people with truth in gentleness and respect, which is what 1 Peter 3:15 wants us to do.
Okay, so I think that today, we're talking about, this is the second part in our series, and we're going back into religion and culture today. And to get started, we're going to look at how religion or even faith in God relates to our society. First, dealing with the U.S. Department of State. Now, on the U.S. Department of State website, it states that the Office of International Religious Freedom has the mission of promoting religious freedom as a core objective of U.S. foreign policy. So that's on your worksheet, on today's worksheet. The answer obviously would be true. So I was amazed to see that this is a core objective of the U.S. foreign policy.
Now, truthfully, I'm going to encourage every single person listening to this broadcast to go on our website, to pull up that particular site, click through to it, because this is actually on the United States Department of State's website. This is not something that we made up. You're gonna be surprised at what you see, because it actually says that the mission is to promote religious freedom as a core objective of U.S. foreign policy. It's amazing that the answer to that question is true when you look at what the culture is doing today.
You know, The second bullet under that, on number one, is that the second thing they state is that religious freedom is the inalienable right of every human being. And they're taking that directly from the Declaration of Independence, of course.
Right.
But they're stating that it's an inalienable right. So when you have freedom of religion, I mean, anybody that questions that, you know, it brings to mind this like church and state thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so closely tied to the foundation of our country, even today.
Right. It's a separation of church and state, not the elimination of church over state.
Yeah.
Right. So we have the right to hold a religious belief if we want to. It's protected under the U.S. Constitution.
So once again, the second bullet under one would be true. And finally, is it true that religious freedom is promoted as a source of stability for all countries? Now, that would be some statement if that's on the U.S. Department of State website.
And the answer to that question is true.
I'm beginning to think this worksheet was stacked.
Yeah, we actually read, go figure, we actually read what the United States government says about religion. And its goal is to promote freedom of religion. And it's viewed as a source of stability for all countries.
Yeah, that's a powerful statement.
Why would they say that?
I'm guessing because the idea of religion or faith in God does bring stability.
Right. I agree.
Otherwise, they wouldn't say it does.
And the lack of religion or God would promote instability, I'm thinking.
Yeah. I'm guessing it would, or maybe they would be promoting that. Right. So for those who would be atheists, I guess maybe you want to stay off this website. Secondly, what does the Bible say about discussing religion?
Well, I know my Bible says, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature, to every person. Right? That's called the Great Commission. And it's in Mark 16:15. And Matthew 28:19, right, we're called to go into the gospel, into the regions, surrounding regions, and preach the gospel.
Okay, so from the Bible standpoint, it lines up with the State Department's statements in that it's saying to go out and preach the gospel to all the world, which sounds to me like, again, it's a stability issue, bringing salvation to the whole world, obviously, from a Christian standpoint. So in Mark 16:15, which is what we would put down for number two there, you can write that out. And he said unto them, Jesus speaking, go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. I remember back to a time when I was told, and I'm sure you were too, that, you know, not to discuss religion, not to discuss politics. You know, and that it could be a problem. But to get into that, I want to bring you back to like fourth grade, if we can go there.
Sure.
All right. So for those of you who are listening in, we're going to go all the way back to fourth grade. Now, what was fourth grade about? Well, this was a time I remember when we were forced to do some square dancing, you know, do-si-do, promenade. You remember that?
We didn't do that in my school, but that's all right. We did other things.
All right. Well, how about dodgeball?
That's what we did. I'm looking down at it. I'm like, dodgeball is what we did.
All right. So there's nothing like throwing a nice hard rubber ball at your friend's head.
Yep.
I mean, that's something that you want to do in school. Also,
very Christian, by the way.
I think so. Aim for, yeah. You always try to gang up. The other thing is that, I don't know if you remember this, but when I was in school, they were telling us that the Russians are going to drop an atomic bomb on our school, potentially. Mm-hmm. And we would have these drills where we go out into the hallway and kind of duck down, cover our heads so that we might live through the nuclear explosion, or I guess the atomic explosion. Did you ever experience that?
We were like in the Cold War type era when I was in grammar school. So we never had to actually do that. But the fear of it and watching stuff on TV was constantly there. There was always that tension that was that permeated the teachers and my parents, because we were in that Cold War state. It was uneasy for being a child.
You know, so one of the things that sticks in my mind is that, you know, during this time, we really were, there was a national sense of the way that this country was formed. Matter of fact, during that time, we went to Pennsylvania, and we took a trip and saw the Liberty Bell. I don't know if you ever had a chance to do that in grammar school.
Actually, we did go as a family to see that, but not with our school.
All right. So why is it that you go and see the Liberty Bell, and on the Liberty Bell, there's a scripture verse.
Mm-hmm.
And the scripture verse is Leviticus 25:10, and it says that you want to proclaim liberty throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof.
Right.
So it's actually a Bible verse right on that Liberty Bell.
Mm-hmm. Promoting freedom.
And, yeah.
You know, I think most people, when they hear religion, they immediately start thinking rules. They start thinking commandments. And they think that rules and commandments limit our freedom, when in all actuality, the rules and the commandments give us freedom. They protect us from being hurt from outside sources. They actually act as a fence to keep evil out, rather than to kill our joy, which is what most people think rules do.
Yeah,
so the commandments and the rules that we learn through religion actually give us freedom, not take freedom away.
All right. So, you know, they rang the Liberty Bell for the purpose of, I think, reading the Declaration of Independence. I think it was July 8th, 1776. They actually read this, they rang it out. And they read it to the citizens of Philadelphia.
Wow.
So on our worksheet, we wrote under religion and our culture, if you, number three, if you were to adhere to an unspoken rule, never talk religion and politics, we would not be able to discuss things like, hey, and I think the first thing you could write down is the Liberty Bell. Right. You can't talk about the Liberty Bell.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Just
a reminder that you're listening to the New York Apologetics radio broadcast with Nick and Anthony. We're on every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Be sure also to check us out at the web at www.newyorkapologetics.com. And for those of you who are just tuning in, we have all this information up on our website at the Apologetics 101 tab. Please feel free to download the worksheets and follow along as we go through this material. We're hoping that after a course of several weeks, you'll have accumulated a bunch of these lessons together to create a little apologetic notebook for yourself. And with that, back to Nick.
All right, so back to the worksheet. The first thing that we're writing under three is that we can't speak about the Liberty Bell. Now, I mean, that sounds kind of ridiculous. What do you have, Ant?
In 1647, there was a law created called the Old Deluder Act. Now, to be quite honest with you, this is something that Nick pulled up because I was shocked when he saw it to me. But I got to go through this with you. On November 11th, 1647, a law was written that replaced the 1642 statute that placed the burden of educating children on parents. Okay, we some people have homeschooling, but now we have schools. And what it did was it required every town with 50 or more households to appoint a teacher and pay his wages. And it required every town with 100 or more households to set up a grammar school for college preparation. And the law's nickname came from its preamble, it being one chief project of the old deluder, Satan, to keep men from the knowledge of the scriptures. The statute marked the start of the universal public education for Americans, and by 1671, all New England colonies but Rhode Island had adopted similar measures.
Yeah, so...
So we can thank Satan... Okay, no. And the knowledge of him to set up the schools. People were concerned that Satan was trying to keep people from being educated and have knowledge of him, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's crazy to think. You know, I was talking to some teachers recently, and I asked them, how did the school system start out here in America? And really, nobody knows. Mm-hmm. Nobody's heard of this act. The Old Deluder Act. This was something that was started in Massachusetts, and really it was for the purpose of Harvard, believe it or not. This act was put in place so that kids would be trained so that they could go on to Harvard. Mm. You know, it was really in sync with that. If you really think about it, it's amazing.
Right. Well, I mean, think about it. If Satan's not going to make himself readily known, he comes in disguised, an angel of light. He tries to make you think that he doesn't exist. And the people, the Puritans at that time who put this law into effect knew that. So they wanted to frame legislation specifically against the satanic ill of not recognizing who he was, which is amazing.
Unbelievable. Couple that with the Liberty Bell. And thirdly, the Declaration of Independence, which we have a copy on the website. We also have a copy of the Deluder Act on the website. You could take a look at that.
It's real.
I know. I know what it is. The Declaration of Independence has three aspects to it. You know, one, it says that we hold these truths to be self-evident. Two, that all men are created equal. And three, that all men are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. So I think that in answer to the third part of our worksheet, if we adhere to the unspoken rule, never talk about religion and politics, we would have to say that the three things you couldn't discuss would be the Declaration of Independence. You couldn't discuss the origin of public schools, and you couldn't discuss the Liberty Bell. Mm. It's kind of restrictive.
Right. And when the Declaration of Independence says we hold these truths to be self-evident, that means self-evident. In other words, it's quite obvious that all men are created equal and that there is a creator. We're endowed by our creator with certain unalienable rights. The same way the laws of logic are self-evident. These are things that are hardwired into us that we can't not know. Right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, when you say that these things are self-evident because they're self-evident, I love that statement because it reminds me when you talk about logic and you say that, you can't create a square circle.
Right.
But my favorite is when you're telling me that, a circle is a circle.
Right.
And a square is a square. Sounds like kindergarten, but really, it's logic.
Right. Exactly.
So with that being said, on the worksheet, on number four, it says, in America, the first law to require education of the masses was passed in 1647, and the law was called the Old Deluder Act, and that would be D-E-L-U-D-E-R. Again, 1647, the Old Deluder Act, and you can see it right on the website. And you really should take a look at it. Everybody should take a look at this.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be part of something that you use in a Trivial Pursuit game or something that you use to stump somebody. You ask them what the Old Deluder Act is. Nobody's going to know. And then you pull out your notebook, and here it is.
Okay. So in number five, the legislation was specifically framed ignorance as a satanic ill to be circumvented through education of the country's young people. And that would be the answer to number five. Again, ignorance as a satanic ill to be circumvented through the education of the country's young people.
Question six reads, it would be required to have every town having more than 50 families to hire a teacher.
Teacher.
Right? And every town more than 100 families to establish a
grammar school.
Right. And this is because of the Old Deluder Act.
Yeah. Matter of fact, if you failed to comply with this mandate, it would result in a fine of £5 back then.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it was actually a fine.
I'm glad you gave him £5. I give him £10 now. Well, that's something different,
I think they
right?
were talking European money. All right, so the grammar school clause was intended to prepare students to attend what college?
Harvard College.
Harvard College, whose mission was to prepare young men for the ministry. Now, when you're looking at Harvard, you might not get that today. And we're going back to that post-Christian secularized, that we're leaning more towards secularization of society than Christian, where it originated.
Right. If Harvard was set up, Harvard College was set up to prepare men for ministry, and you look at it now, does it prepare men for ministry? It doesn't prepare men for Christian ministry. Remember, everybody is a commercial for what they believe. Everybody is an apologist. So Harvard's not setting people up to go into ministry at this point.
All right. Well, we have something here on the YMCA. Mm. Now, one of the things that I have is I have a little booklet from the YMCA from the Civil War that they were handing out to the North, I'm guessing. And it's kind of an antique, and I have some old things. And I was really shocked when I first got it because it didn't say YMCA on it. It actually said Young Men's Christian Association, which I never realized was the YMCA. How about you?
No, and most people don't know what the YMCA stands for, like you just said, Young Men's Christian Association. In fact, I think if you even said something like that, people would take offense to that. As if, you know, Christians are the only ones who can set up an organization like this. But what this organization was started to do was to take young men, train them up, give them an opportunity in the community, and train them to understand biblical truths, to understand who God is and how that's going to positively affect their lives. And where it started and where it ended are two completely different places.
Yeah, now, you know, speaking about where is the belief in God in these days, there's something called, it's a doctrine actually of Christianity, which is called the universality of belief in the existence of God. Mm-hmm. And we're going to discuss that briefly today to get an idea on it. It definitely has apologetic value, as does everything we discussed today that would give one a background in some American culture so that you can talk intelligent. We speak to people. We can ask them about the Liberty Bell. We can ask them about the formation of our school system. We can ask them about the Declaration of Independence. You know, these are things that are intensely theistic in their nature. All right. So what is the universality of belief in the existence of God?
Well, the answer to that question would be man everywhere believes in the existence of a supreme being or beings to whom he is morally responsible and to whom propitiation needs to be made. In other words, throughout all time, in all history, in all cultures, all peoples have had a universal belief in God. Most every culture that you've heard about or seen, even on TV, they have some kind of understanding of some theistic God.
Now, you say, how could so many people believe in God? What causes such an effect? And on the worksheet, number two, under the universality of the belief in the existence of God, you got a bullet point there that says, can this be from reason or logical argument? And the answer would be, really, we'd have to say no, because there are many people who believe in God that have not given any time to reasoning it out or to going through arguments concerning God. It's not built on necessarily reasoning and arguments.
Right, and that's not a negative towards religion or belief in God. What that's saying is most people don't have training in formal logic, yet they believe in the laws of logic. In other words, they haven't been trained to use logic to find logic. The same way people haven't been trained to believe in God in order to believe in God. It's hardwired in us.
Right. So it doesn't come from reason, doesn't come from logic. It doesn't come from tradition.
Right.
The reason it doesn't come from tradition is because tradition can only perpetuate what it has originated.
Right.
In other words, it has to start somewhere. Mm-hmm. And since belief in God would be before any tradition, otherwise you would be able to find that the entire species, if you will, of mankind would be godless and then invented God and then started believing in it. But that's not the case. As long as we can go back in recorded history, man has believed in God.
Man has a yearning and a desire for God. Now, the question I would raise is, would man have a yearning and a desire for food and water if he didn't need food and water, or if food and water didn't exist? So the very fact that man has a desire to know God, to seek out the things of God, that would show that, obviously, he's seeking out something that he needs.
How about if someone said to you, well, you know, man came to know God through the scriptures?
Well, unless a man had a knowledge of God from whom the scriptures came, the revelation itself could have no authority for him. The very idea of scripture as a revelation presupposes belief in a God who can make it, right? And that was written by Newman Smith. Revelation must assume the existence of God. In other words, you can't receive revelation from something you don't believe exists in the first place.
All right, so it's safe to say that the universal belief comes from within man.
Yes.
And that all the evidence points to the conclusive fact that this universal faith in the existence of God is innate in man and comes from a rational intuition, like you said. It's hardwired.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's innate in man. It comes from within us. So what would you think we're going to do? Now we're up to the weight and the force of this argument, right? Question five says, so universal, an effect, must have a cause just as universal. So, in other words, the effect must match the cause, and the cause must match the effect.
Right. So, how else, in number six, how else could we explain such an effect without any, you know, assignable or conveyable cause? You can't.
No.
You can't have such a widespread effect without a cause. It would be ridiculous to think that it just happens to everyone. And this is still prevalent today, which we're going to get into probably next week, because it looks like we're running out of time.
Well, we're close to the end of the broadcast, and thank you again for joining us. Please go to the website, download these worksheets, and follow along. We're going to continue this again next week. Thanks again for joining us for the last half hour. We hope that you've been strengthened and encouraged in your faith. Please again visit the website for more great information on apologetics and to see any upcoming events we've planned. Please also email us your questions. We're eager to talk to you and to connect with you and answer some of the questions that you may be facing. So again, from Nick and Anthony at New York Apologetics, be equipped, be empowered, and be engaged with the culture around you. Until next week, think it through.
Don't miss the New York Apologetics radio show every Thursday evening at 7 p.m. right here on Hope Radio. For more information, head over to NewYorkApologetics.com.